This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a saintly ballet, an evening of opera, or a musical stage drama, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Marigny Opera Ballet opens its fourth season with the world premiere of Book of Saints. The full-length ballet, staged in the Marigny Opera House, celebrates three saints and is performed in two acts. Producer and artistic director Dave Herbert and acclaimed New Orleans composer Tucker Fuller are here. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Diane.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the new season. 4 years.
4 years, it's hard to believe.
What was the inspiration for this work?
My inspiration for the idea, which developed over a couple of years, was one of my favorite pieces of music, the Stravinsky Mass. It was an important piece for me when I was a music student at North Carolina School of the Arts, and I've loved it ever since. About two seasons ago, I started trying to plan what we could possibly do for a great full-length, two-act ballet with original music, following Orfeo and Giselle Delande. And I kept listening to the Stravinsky, and I thought, well, you know, something like this might work, something with a chorus, something with soloists. And that led me to think what themes might go with music like that. I didn't want to do something liturgical or try to recreate a mass. I've also been a fan of the saints, and I put the two together. I thought, I wonder if something dramatic like the life of St. Teresa of Avila or St. Francis of Assisi or St. Sebastian would work with music like this. I started to study actual books of saints and the lives of the saints and tried to think how they could be danced. Now, that was a problem because Teresa of Avila was very interior. She is the only female recognized doctor of the Roman Catholic Church. Quite an intellectual and quite spiritual. Her writings are very inward. Saint Sebastian, not much is known about him except that he was a soldier and he was executed. Well, you can show an execution, but that's only about 1 minute of dance, and that's if you really, you know, prolong it. Then there's Saint Francis, the beloved Saint Francis of Assisi. How do you portray such goodness on the stage without seeming corny or without seeming trite? I think we figured out a way to present the essence of the lives of these three people. And we do it as vignettes. Act one is a vignette of St. Teresa and her confessor, her priest. Act two is St. Sebastian doing military exercises as a soldier. Scene three then is St. Francis as the young aristocrat that he was, living a life of ease in northern Italy in the Middle Ages. What links them all together are the appearances of angels, of seraphs. We use the seraphs in this ballet to sort of serve as a communication from beyond, a communication from eternity or infinity or heaven, if you like. In each of the scenes, the seraphs appear to these saints. Only the saints can see them. And they end up transforming the lives of each of these three people. So with all of the roles, the three saints, the three seraphs, the priests, the soldiers, the aristocrats, we are using the skills of all 11 of our dancers.
And the score. Tucker, you have outdone yourself. Tell us about this original work.
I, too, like the Stravinsky Mass a lot, and so I decided to use a very similar instrumentation. It's brass, woodwinds, and percussion. So I use that as sort of the basis of the orchestration and then adding Prudhoeval, which is a local wonderful group of musicians, singers, and they specialize sort of in early music. Their director is Paul Weber. And New Resonance, so the score draws on a lot of sort of early music, a lot of Monteverdi, a lot of polyphony. In certain sections, there's also like Anglican anthems, all sorts of things. And it's modeled more after a cantata, There's a story, sort of an underlying narrative to it for chorus and instrumentalists. It was a lot of fun to work on.
Yeah, you've got a chamber orchestra and an 8-member vocal ensemble.
Yeah, and they sound great. And the orchestra, New Resonance, they've just done a wonderful job, and they're just such wonderful musicians to work with.
And you also enlisted the help of a choreographer from New York?
Yes, Teresa Felion is a choreographer that I've been following for a number of years. Teresa and I started talking about a year ago about the possibility of her coming to New Orleans to do some workshops, choreographic dance workshops with our company. And it finally dawned on us, well, why don't we see if you can actually come down and set a new work? So we tried it. She came to New Orleans. She stayed for 3 weeks. We rehearsed our company all day and on weekends, extra rehearsals, and it all worked. She managed to set the entire piece within the 3 weeks. We've been rehearsing it since, and now it's all coming together.
How do you think local audiences will connect?
I think here what we wanted to talk about is transformation, how one's life changes and becomes elevated, how one can be lifted up. I think current conditions in our country, political, environmental, sociological, I think it's important for us to focus on how each of us can transform, be uplifted. And maybe that's one way out of all of this. And I think a good example are these three saints, how they were lifted out of pretty bad conditions into even rapturous states, lifted up into joy. I'm hoping that because we are the city of saints, that there will be some resonance there.
Producer Dave Herbert and New Orleans composer Tucker Fuller. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The Marigny Opera Ballet presents Book of Saints at the Marigny Opera House, 725 St. Ferdinand Street. Three performances, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a board member of the Marigny Opera House Foundation. The New Orleans Opera is celebrating its 75th anniversary with a double bill, Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci. Maestro Robert Lyle joins us. Welcome.
Thank you, Diane.
What are your thoughts on this Diamond Jubilee?
75 years is a great accomplishment. Of course, we like to think more even about the history of opera in New Orleans, because this is the 222nd year of opera. We rightfully claim to be America's first city of opera. First documented performances here in the French Quarter in 1796. The evolution of the art form in America was really based here because we were the direct pipeline to Europe, and the art form flourished in the Gulf South and then moved to the Northeast to the major cities there. It's a colorful history. By the way, tied to, in many respects, the famous French Opera House that opened in 1859 here in New Orleans and became the most important building in the city for the 19th century. It was the center of Creole culture. It was the center of social events, arts events, political events, and performances of every kind. And it was the mainstay of the cultural life of New Orleans until it burned in 1918. It signified, in many respects, the importance of opera to this city and really the core of its French culture at the time. So when we come to the modern era and the founding of the modern New Orleans Opera Company some 75 years ago, interestingly, it started in Tad Gormley Stadium in City Park with a wonderful program called Opera Under the Stars. And the first pieces performed were Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci. I swear that sometime during my tenure, I'm going to take productions out to Tad Gormley Stadium and revisit the Opera Under the Stars concept. It was popular then, and I'm sure it'll be popular now. And now we are engaged in our production of Cavalleria and Pagliacci, or Cav Pag, as it is affectionately called. It's also affectionately called Ham and Eggs, because they've been done together for so many years.
What can we look forward to?
Well, Cavalleria Rusticana simply translates as rustic chivalry. It's actually a revenge story. young man in the village gets involved with another man's wife, and so there's a Sicilian standoff there in which, in the final moment, they meet behind the barn, and things don't go well for the young man, I can tell you. So it's hardly chivalry as much as I say, it's revenge. Both of these works represent a style of opera called verismo. Verismo is simply an Italian word that means realism. So instead of the centuries of repertory that had been presented, which were kings and queens and gods and goddesses and battles between the church and the state, we're suddenly looking at the lives of just real people, even lower class workers and peasants and villagers, every social stratification, of course, but the primary interest is the conflict in their lives and just how real it is. Both of these works, Cavalleria Rusticana, premiered in 1890 and Pagliacci in 1892. So they came at the end of the 19th century and had built very elaborately upon the work of Verdi and, of course, was an extension of the work of Puccini. Pagliacci means the clowns. And what does that mean? Well, you know, back in the 19th century and the 18th, actually it goes back many centuries, the idea of what is known as commedia dell'arte, which is a very refined kind of comedy, which tells very familiar stories. They are acted out, and in this case, they were taken from community to community. They toured, and it was a great event when your commedia dell'arte troupe arrived in your village and for a few days set up shop and gave evening performances. So this is a ritual enjoyed in Italian culture, and that is the backdrop against which the play Pagliacci takes place, because it, too, is famous for its unique event, the play within the play. So Cagno is the director of this touring Commedia dell'arte company, and members of that troupe include his wife Neda, Antonio, and Beppe, and of course we've thrown in a few clowns and acrobats and things of that sort to flesh it out. And they have arrived in this small Calabrian village for their annual show, and they are met with wild enthusiasm by the public, and then the villagers want to take Cagno down to the local tavern for a drink, and it creates a scenario in which his wife, who is a much younger woman that he kind of lifted from the gutters and gave her a new life, has grown disenchanted with this relationship because of his drinking and brutality and things of that nature. And so she has found herself attracted to a villager named Silvio. And Silvio suddenly appears, and they rush to embrace the moment. And one of the members of the troupe notices this and brings Cagno back. Now he has caught his wife in an indelicate moment, and yet the play is about to begin. And so it leads us to one of the most poignant moments in all of opera, actually, Vesti la giubba, and that is I have to dress. I have to put on my clown makeup. My heart is broken. I'm weeping and sobbing at the pain of this moment, and yet I'm compelled to step upon the stage and make people laugh. Thus begins the famous play within the play. And so it ends tragically as well. Two evening works of really some of the height of operatic tragedy, Italian melodrama.
And who are the lead singers?
Well, Frank Poretto is singing the role of Cagno. Jessica Rose Cambio is singing the role of Neda for the man-wife relationship in Pagliacci. Dana Beth Miller is singing the role of Santuzza in Cavalleria Rusticana, and Dominic Chenis is singing the role of Turidu. Wayne Tigges is the only person double cast, and that is he sings both Alfio, the outraged husband in Cavalleria Rusticana, and also Tonio, the kind of malicious member of the clown troupe in Pagliacci. And of course, we're always accompanied by our magnificent Louisiana Philharmonic.
Sounds like a wonderful evening.
They're colorful productions, they are meaningful, I guess, in our lives when we look at interpersonal relationships and how these things have been captured by great creative artists for centuries.
Maestro Robert Lyle with the New Orleans Opera. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Diane.
The New Orleans Opera stages a double bill, Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci, with performances Friday and Sunday at the Mahalia Jackson Theater for the Performing Arts in Armstrong Park. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The regional premiere of the Tony Award-winning musical Fun Home opens Southern Rep Theater's 31st season. The musical, adapted by Lisa Cron and Janine Tesori, is based on cartoonist Alison Bechdel's graphic memoir. It's an emotional roller coaster ride, a coming of age and coming out journey to self-acceptance. Joining me are cast members Leslie Castay, Camille Berkey, and artistic director Amy Hayes. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Diane.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hi.
Two words come to mind after reading the plot summary of this critically acclaimed production. It's complicated. How did Southern Rep come to choose this work to open its season?
This is Amy. The reason why we chose this show, Diane, is because if we're going to do a musical, we want it to be fresh, we want it to be now, and relevant to what it means to be a human being in 2017. And for me, this play, personally, was so touching because I'm always trying to figure out, why did I end up this way? What was it about my family or our secrets, or what are the things that make us who we are? And I love how these playwrights and lyricists and composer have made music that journey and highlighted what it means to figure out who you are.
This is Leslie. The piece really resonated with me because I think most adults, when they reach a certain threshold, I think the protagonist is 43 when she looks back at her family, reaches the point to say how I got this. And especially someone in a creative field definitely looks to their past to see the formative instances and memories that make her what she is. And in the process, she discovers sort of what made her family tick as well. And that's what makes it so fascinating.
The title, Fun Home, is anything but, as these characters are trying to deal with dysfunction on several levels.
Yes. What's so wonderful in New Orleans, we say we put the fun in funeral, because we do. And so what a perfect musical for New Orleans. Fun Home references the funeral home that the family runs.
This is Camille. There's a scene where me and my siblings are playing in like the funeral home, and so we're in the caskets and we're just having a bunch of fun. We just think of it as like a regular thing to do.
Tell us about the cartoonist and author Alison Bechdel. Who is she?
Alison Bechdel is a graphic novelist and writer and thinker who I think is really sort of changing how we look at women's roles and LGBT roles in American art and theater. New Orleanians might remember Bechdel from the cartoon that she ran in Impact Magazine, which was a weekly around in the 70s and 80s. And for everyone else, a pop culture reference that she created, the Bechdel test, which means when you have two women in a work of art, if they talk about something besides men, then they have passed the Bechdel test.
Camille, is this your debut role with Southern Rep?
It is. I've done a bunch of their kid productions when I was in, like, first and second grade.
But this is your debut in an adult production.
Yes.
And you are playing the role of the young Allison.
I am. When she was a 9 or 10-year-old, I get to act like an actual kid in this show.
And you are Leslie's real-life daughter. You guys are playing opposite one another.
Yeah, I've never been in a show with my mom before, and so it's different, and it's really fun.
So let's set the stage.
Alison Bechdel looks back in her 40s. She's experiencing a writer's block, and she looks back trying to find the breakthrough points in how she ended up who she is. Her father, Bruce Bechdel, was closeted homosexual and had trouble dealing with his sexuality. Allison grows up to be gay. She comes out as a lesbian at Oberlin College. And 4 or 5 weeks after she comes out to her family, her father commits suicide. Now, this is mentioned in the opening number, so it's not a spoiler alert in this show. It's all about the path that gets us to that point. It sounds like a very dark elevator speech, as we like to say, what is the show about? But it's a very moving, universal story about anybody finding their path, finding their way to a creative life and the reasons why.
Camille and Leslie, is there a scene that you can share from the musical?
Yes, there's a brief scene when small Allison is drawing for a school project, and she asks her mother details about her past. And we learn that her parents, as young newlyweds, lived in Germany because Bruce Bechtel was in the army, and he was stationed in Germany. And I think this was their sort of newlywed period, when they were their happiest, before they had to come back to Pennsylvania and run the family funeral home.
Mom, I have a question.
What?
What was the name of that street you lived on in New York?
Bleecker?
Yeah, good. Mom, I have a question.
What?
What color was the house you lived in Germany?
Well, it was an apartment, not a house, and I don't remember what color it was.
All right, something else about what it looked like then.
Well, we had a balcony. Oh, we had a lovely balcony, and in the morning, friends of ours would come over, and we'd sit there and talk and have breakfast.
All right, where'd you live after that?
Here. Your grandfather died while we were over there, so we came back.
Oh, yeah, because Daddy had to run the fun home.
Yes.
How are you hoping audiences will connect with this family, albeit a dysfunctional one?
I think they'll connect in a way to be a little more honest in their relationships with their family and with others, and be a little more honest with themselves, perhaps.
Actors Leslie Castay and Camille Berkey with Southern Rep Artistic Director Aimee Hayes. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Southern Rep Theater and Noga Stage Company present Fun Home at Noga's NIMS Black Box Theater, 2800 Charter Street, with performances running now through October 22nd. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.